Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday here on the Jeff Calkins Show. Wednesdays are busy. Wednesdays are busy. We got John Martin, we got Chris Harrington, and we got Sam Hardiman. And we have a lot to talk to each of them about. Let's go in reverse order. Sam Hardiman has been in the middle of a whole bunch of stories recently. So I can't wait to have him on, including the city's decision to buy well, they haven't decided, but goal, they've decided they want to, the mayor has, buy the Sheraton Hotel down across from the convention center. Price tag, Jeffrey, $22 million for the Sheraton, which is about, as Sam pointed out to me, you could either, and let me ask you this, would you rather buy an old hotel, leave the AAC, or have Jaren Jackson as an employee for a year?
Oh God!
Those I think are your choices for basically that amount of money. Those are the ones that Sam offered me. I don't know if they line up exactly, but would you rather own the Sheraton, leave the AAC, or have Jaren as an employee for a year?
Have Jaren? It's to me. It's
22 million.
It's the AAC or own Jaren, right? Or not own Jaren, but pay Jaren.
You know, own Jaren, but you got him working for you. He does work for you.
He'll at least be under contract.
He's under contract with you for a year. That's a tough choice. But anyway, in addition to that, Sam will explain to me why we'd want to own a hotel. In particular, let's be honest, that hotel. We'll talk to him about that. Also, AutoZone Park's getting some public money for improvements. He was in the middle of that story. And he had the story earlier this week that prompted my column about the Grizzlies, which is Mayor Young talked to Sam about the fact that the city is going to ask the state for money for downtown security, and while that's generally needed, we need a safe and secure downtown. Obviously, it's also needed if you're going to persuade the Grizzlies to sign a lease, because. Let's be honest, if you're moving into an apartment building, you wouldn't sign a long-term lease if you thought the apartment building was dangerous. And the same thing is true for the Grizzlies. So it's really as part of the Grizzlies negotiations, they need some assurance and clarity on whether the city and downtown is going to be safe. So a whole lot of things to talk to Sam about. Chris Harrington, he's been a busy man. He's got his movie reviews, not reviews, but his review of what is happening this weekend in the movies in Memphis, in cinema in Memphis. We could talk to him about that. He's also identified the greatest soul song to come out of Memphis ever. And that's as part of the Memphis Music Hall of Fame ceremony. The person who sang it is going to be inducted posthumously. Is that how you pronounce that?
Yes.
Posthumously. I think that's right. James Carr. So we could talk to him about that. But then we got basketball news. We have details on the Derrick Rose exit, financial details on the Derrick Rose exit, which turned out very well for the Memphis Grizzlies. And we've got a date for TA's jersey retirement ceremony. Number 9 will go up into the rafters on March 15th. So a lot to talk to Chris about. And then again, we're going in reverse order in the next segment. After this open, we're going to talk to John Martin. And I like talking to John. As obviously before I had Jeffrey as a co-host, I had John as a co-host, and John's a good friend, and I like talking to John. And one of the things I want to talk to John about is he's legit bothered by this stuff that's happened with Memphis, like legit depressed. And it, as such, he represents a strand of Memphis fandom here. I've heard from others. Jay writes me, a guy named Jay writes me. He sent me a long email about just how unbelievably depressed he is by this turn of events. And I find it discouraging what has happened, but I'm a little less... you know, I've never come out and said Memphis was wrong not to go with any degree of confidence. And some of that's just because I'm kind of like, I, I, I don't know what they were up against internally. You know, A, we have some sense of what the numbers were about the exit fee and all of that. I also don't know what their discussions were like with their boosters, though. You know, what like
we also don't know what their discussions were like with the AAC in terms of.
Yeah. So yeah, there's so much missing that for me to just say they should have gone. I haven't felt comfortable saying that. I have felt very comfortable saying the fact that they didn't go is depressing, and it's depressing because it means they're stuck where they are. And so, while they may or may not, maybe they didn't practically have any choice but to go, but that doesn't make it any better that they're stuck with where they are. And so, but I also, I don't know. I'm just like John, and you hear it on the radio show. Like John is legit worked up about this, and from the first time he talked to Jason, he and Jason talked about the subject, and it turns out they were on opposite sides. John was like texting me afterwards, like upset, because he believes in this to his core. I think he legit despises the AAC. And what it has done, what being in the AAC, the way that it has degraded interest, degraded the fan base, et cetera. And so I just want to get more on his perspective. You know, Jeffrey, just so I'm clear, what is your final answer here? Are you saying they should have gone, or are you saying it's just depressing like me that it's defensible that they didn't go, but it's depressing? Or are you saying they made the right decision and joy reigns supreme?
So obviously I have mixed feelings. Number one, I'm not one to sit there and point the finger and say, how could you not pull the trigger? I think the way that I view it is we've all been coming up with our metaphors. To me, the metaphor that I've decided makes the most sense is Memphis had the opportunity to join a startup, and I think that startup clearly has a much higher ceiling than the company that they're at. That startup could also fail, and what is it? I think it's like 90% of startups fail, and 80% I think fail.
I like this metaphor.
And 80% fail within the first 5 years. But that startup could be significant, has a much, much higher ceiling than the conference that you're in, but they chose to stay at their corporate job with salary, benefits, everything.
I like the metaphor,
like stability.
But what's your final answer on what they should have done? Well, you've now framed it differently, but I need your conclusion.
I think you're damned if you do and damned if you don't.
You're not willing to say what they should have done, because they aren't willing over there. They couldn't say damned if you do. They had to make a choice,
right? But they couldn't say
these are hard.
No. So I'm saying damned if you, damned if you don't. Well, damned if I do leave. Well, now I'm out another how many millions? You know,
I see both downsides. They had to pick a downside.
That's what I'm saying. I think overall, I think they probably picked the most prudent decision.
That's correct. And is it the one you would have picked? Knowing with all the limitations that you know, what would you? I guess you're not, but I'm not saying that either. You're just saying you're not willing to criticize them for making the choice they made.
Right. I think
but you
I
do find it depressing. You're in my camp. You're not willing to criticize them for the choice they made. In the end, you're not saying they made the wrong choice. You're just saying it's depressing. You're in my camp.
Yeah. I think if it were simply a question of which league would you rather be in, I think it's a slam dunk. The problem is that's not the question.
Anyway, we will we'll explore this further with John, and hopefully maybe in the process exercise some demons along the way. A little bit of sort of sad, not sad, but awkward development on this front is there is a women's basketball media availability Thursday with Coach Simmons and with Athletic Director Scott, right? And the original note said they'd be available. They followed it up with a note that said, I apologize for the confusion for the women's basketball media availability that just went out for Thursday. Dr. Scott will be there to provide some opening remarks at the Hoops and Diamonds season tip-off event, but he will not be speaking with the media. He will be there in support of Coach Simmons and the program as they prepare for the 24-25 season. Well, that's a little awkward, Jeffrey. Like, what they're basically saying is, no, we're not going to take any questions about this topic. We're not willing to address it. And that's just, it makes it very clear. Like, we are not talking about this. Now, honestly, I totally understand not wanting to talk about this at a women's basketball event. But the way then to address it is to talk about it for the women's basketball event or at a separate occasion, right? Do a noon Thursday availability with Dr. Scott and Dr. Hargrave. And then you've got clear sailing for the women's basketball event when it comes around later on that day. To me, that would be the way to do it. And although I do think it's a difficult spot for Memphis to be in to explain this decision to the fan base, I think the fan base is significantly either enraged and or demoralized that they should. In one form or another, they should. Now, I'll be honest. I don't know that President Hargrave is up to it. I don't mean that as an intellectual. He's just so far. He has not shown himself to be a run through the walls leader on publicly, right, Jeffrey? Can we agree on that?
Like, yeah, no, he's not certainly like a dynamic personality.
No, and he doesn't sound. He sounds like he's cautiously stepping around things, right? Like not. Whereas Ed Scott's been in the two appearances I've heard him, which is at his when he was introduced, and on this show. Incredible, both places. Incredible. So what I would do if I were the University of Memphis is I would arm Ed Scott with the talking points and I would send him out to talk to anyone and everyone about the future of Memphis athletics. Because I don't think there's anything to be gained by hiding. And I think that he has it in him. I've heard him to make you feel really good about the University of Memphis and their athletic department and their athletic future. And this might be a little tough sell, but you know what? He walked in after the Penny Hardaway mess. That was a tough sell. And he sounded great then. I was like at the end, I was like, damn, that was good. I feel hopeful. And I think he has it in him. It's just a skill set. I'm not criticizing the leadership of Dr. Hargrave one way or another. I honestly don't know enough about it to say, but he's never inspired the troops. That's never been his approach to leadership so far as I can tell. And even when he does talk mostly, it's through these canned videos that he puts out every week, which are very carefully cultivated and whatever else, which seems to indicate that they much prefer him in a situation where they can carefully
controlled
edit and curate what he says, yeah, than having him out there just talking. They recognize what his strengths are. And Ed Scott's great at this. And listen, I'd love to have him on this show, but I'm not going to be proprietary about it. The future of the University of Memphis Athletic Department is at stake. I'd send him out to every Rotary Club, every other radio show, every podcast, and get him out there. I'd get Penny out there too, honestly, except he won't talk either. Here we have a problem, Jeffrey. You got the president and the AD who won't talk and the basketball coach who won't talk. And then Silverfield, Silverfield won't come on our airwaves.
So
because I think he's got contractual commitments to, you know, others. So literally they have no one to talk. They are wondering why people don't come. They have nobody to talk.
I'd clarify. Penny has been talking.
Brooks is good. Brooks is good. Brooks is good.
I guess I'd clarify. Penny's been talking, just not about anything that anyone wants to ask about.
You're right. He's been talking lately.
But I guess if I'm trying to draw a distinction between Ed's coming on our show after the chaotic week that was, you know, the whole basketball program, you still have the reality that this team's going to be favored to win the league and has a very good shot of being a tournament team. And so you know that the outcome could be positive. How do you, like, I don't know, if how do you rally the troops to be positive about this? Because Like, I, you know what I mean? Like, I just don't even know what the outcome is. Like, to me, it seems very simple.
Some of it is literally just being, just sounding enthusiastic. It, literally, if you just come on here and say, listen, man, I can't tell you about all the details, but trust me, if you were, you know, a lot of stuff has come out. This wasn't close. You know, this wasn't close. Of course, we explore every opportunity, and we believe what this shows is that the world is shifting and you never know what opportunities are coming. We didn't know 3 weeks ago that this opportunity was coming. Just pops up. You're naive if you think there aren't going to be more opportunities. Does SMU know, whatever? All of a sudden, what, we have 30 years of conference realignment and it's just going to stop now because this one stopped? Like, this one came out of nowhere. And so the truth of the matter is we are, in fact, still the most attractive G5 school. That's why they came after us first. We are the most attractive. You're naive if you think it's not. Oh, they're just done. After 30 years of this constantly shifting environment, they're just done. We have made ourselves into the most attractive. I know this looks like a setback. This was a no-brainer for us. This is the truth of the matter is that we've used this to get a better deal from the AAC. And if you can discuss those things. We're going to have the conference tournament back here. Of course, we're going to keep looking for other opportunities. In the meantime, we've got a new stadium. We've got the richest NIL deal in the conference. We're going to continue to build on that. I know you all might be moralized because you've been through this for 30 years, and so you're having PSD. I can tell you, as someone who just arrived here, it's an incredibly exciting time for Memphis. Yes, we have work to do. This is not an attractive basketball schedule. We get that. But you know what? We're going to kick ass. You know what was fun? Wasn't an attractive basketball schedule when John Calipari was running it either. We're going to kick ass in this basketball schedule. We're going to go to the NCAA tournament. We're going to, you know, we still have a shot at the playoff. If you think we're just folding up our tents because, I mean, look at the way they're scrapping now out there in the Pac-12. There's, sure. The Pac-12 is suing the Mountain West. The Mountain West it's a clown show. We're joining that, and that's what's going to demoralize you? Don't be silly. That shouldn't demoralize you. We, you know, and the truth of the matter is, and I hate to even say this, but we need people. Like, we literally, and I know that's what we need you. We need your enthusiasm. We still need your enthusiasm. You know what? You know, and you know, by the way, one place we really do need their enthusiasm, and I mean this, by the way, I'm 100% even more serious than I was when I was just trying to act. We need people to buy tickets for the Memphis, North Carolina, and Memphis, South Carolina exhibition for St. Jude. We do need that. In fact, I was talking to the folks there yesterday, and they've had there was a great burst of enthusiasm. There was a great burst of enthusiasm early on. And a bunch of people bought tickets. But here's the truth. You're worried about the future of Memphis. You want good programming at the University of Memphis, compelling games at the Memphis. Here's a chance to do something and support this event. Because right now it is a exhibition basketball doubleheader. And it's great. It brings in two of the greatest brands, North Carolina in men's hoops and South Carolina in women's hoops. They're coming to Memphis. They're playing Memphis, and they're coming to Memphis. But right now, the number of tickets sold, I'll just tell you, is not enough to guarantee that ever happen again, much less that it would ever be a regular season tournament. And so we need people. If you say you're so depressed and in the dumps, here's what you do. You pick up the phone, and you go buy two tickets or four tickets or eight tickets and give them to people on the street for that event. We don't need 4,000 or 5,000 people in the building in that. We need 10,000 people in the building for that. We need 12,000 people in the building for that. We need people to, and that's not, I'm not asking you to buy for a bad product. I'm asking you to buy to see North Carolina men's basketball play Memphis. Really, it's, and the South Carolina women with Dawn Staley and that dynasty play the University of Memphis women. And this is all in one great night. It's going to be televised. And it's a chance to build something. It's a chance to create an in-season tournament that is going to come back every year with compelling competition for the University of Memphis. So stop feeling pitiful for yourselves and start doing the things that you can do to support this university that you say you love. Do that. Like, I get it. I get people are demoralized, but I'm telling you, if you'd seen this deal with the Pac-12, this is not the thing to be demoralized about. Yeah, be demoralized about the defense against Navy. A lot of people were. I was defense was. They're going to do better, and they're going to show out against MTSU. But this is not a moment to feel pathetic and quit. This is not a moment to quit, Jeffrey. Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor?
German,
yeah, right. Anyway. I'll say this, you sold me on that
because in the end, I am someone that believes when you hide, it allows for people to, A, speculate, but it also just makes people feel worse. If you come out and you have a consistent message and you give people something to rally behind, you sold me on that. I think the more that we talk through this, though, I think I've realized part of the reason why I feel mixed about this. I kind of feel bad for Memphis because they didn't really ask to be put in this spot, and the Pac-12 kind of hoodwinked everybody initially, and they ran this like media blitz, and they had a really crappy plan.
And they had a crappy plan, and their plan was to give you $2.5 million.
Right,
$2.5 million.
And so, Memphis,
by the way, though, this is another reason, and I'm not like again, University of Memphis can do whatever they want to do in terms of their PR. But when you talk about the media blitz, know what that was? That was the Pac-12 sources talking to John Canzano and others, right?
Oh, yeah.
Who are getting their side out.
Yep. And they were putting the pressure on.
And you know what Memphis has not yet proven to be good at? Doing the opposite, you know, or doing their version of that.
Except for the stadium, except for the stadium money.
They did on the stadium deal. They did on the stadium deal. And look how effective it was. So anyway, by the way, I really do mean it. I said it as part of my in-person, being Ed Scott rant, which I thought was okay, by the way.
I'm telling you, you convinced me.
Yeah, I didn't think it was bad. I did mean to bring up the St. Jude game, though. It is absolutely true. Like there was initial flurry of interest and PR over the St. Jude exhibition doubleheader with Memphis that is coming up, and that was great to see because it's kind of an incredible event that they are hosting. It's October 15th at FedEx Forum. Just and when this happened, we couldn't quite believe it. Wait, North Carolina is coming to Memphis, the North Carolina men and the South Carolina women, and on it's the same night, and every dollar of your ticket sales goes to St. Jude? I'll sign up for that. Oh, and by the way, if it's a massive success, we have a chance to turn this into a regular season tournament that happens every year that counts, that isn't an exhibition thing. I'll support that. That's something that I'm going to support, that I actually create something fabulous in the city of Memphis every single year. Well, there was an initial flurry of interest, and then it is predictably tailed off. And ticket sales are fine, but I'm here to tell you they're not good enough that it'll ever happen again. And they're not good enough right now that it'll be a regular. Again, there's time. It's not till October 15th. But if you... Honestly, it's going to be a great night. It's like Memphis Madness on steroids. Like, it's real. You're not just going to have to watch some silly dunk contest. And you get to watch the men play the North Carolina men and the women play the South Carolina women. That's quite extraordinary. So I would, if you say you care about Memphis, I would pick up the phone or log on or whatever you have to do and get a couple of tickets for that. I'm not going to spend a lot of time, Jeffrey, on the fight between right now that's going on between the Mountain West and the Pac-12. But the Pac-12 has sued the Mountain West, saying that the poaching fees that the Mountain West plans to extract from the Pac-12 are not enforceable. And this is in addition to the exit fees. What are they? $17 million, Jeffrey? Is that what they are, basically? Something like that, right?
Yeah.
The exit fees that all the teams have to pay, all the schools have to pay. In addition, there's a $10 million poaching fee, and then it's with a $500,000 elevator for each school. So the first team you poach is $10 million, then it's $10 million, $500,000, then it's $11 million, et cetera, right? And so, and the Pac-12, it's sort of hilarious because the Pac-12 is saying, listen, we were desperate when we signed this. It's not enforceable, which doesn't seem like a reason to not enforce a contract because there was a lot of leverage on one side. I think if you're looking at it, I suspect what the argument is that this provision, a poaching fee, violates antitrust law and therefore is unenforceable. It's not like, man, this was a great deal they negotiated, therefore we don't want to pay it. I think the argument is, and I haven't looked at the pleadings or anything else, but I suspect what they're saying is this particular provision, which limits, which basically carves up a marketplace, is unenforceable as a matter of antitrust law. I don't know. I haven't looked at it, but they're throwing food at each other over there. In the meantime, also in the world of college sports, we've got Matthew Sluka. You're familiar, are you not, with
yes,
the,
of course.
Decision
former New Hampshire quarterback, now at UNLV.
You probably
well
knew
was
his
at
work.
UNLV.
I thought he was at Holy Cross.
No, you're right. Holy Cross, Holy not Cross? New Hampshire. Yeah, sorry. I think maybe his coordinator was at New Hampshire.
Anyway, he posted on social media last night. Really, quite an extraordinary statement. Says the following: he's the starting quarterback at UNLV. At undefeated UNLV, at Barry Odom's undefeated UNLV team, with, has legit playoff aspirations. And he writes, I've decided to utilize my redshirt year and will not be playing in any additional games this season. I committed to UNLV based on certain representations that were made to me, which were not upheld after I enrolled. Despite discussions, it became clear that these commitments would not be fulfilled in the future. I wish my teammates the best of luck this season and hope for the continued success of the program. So he is saying he was promised NIL money. He did not get it. And so, therefore, he is walking away. Now, mind you, there's a separate narrative here that I have heard that exists online, which is that he went in and asked for more money from Barry Odom, and Barry Odom.
Well, also said, that his family hired an agent after, after a couple of big high-profile wins, and then they went in and asked for more.
And there, so, and by the way, his number's not really particularly startling.
So he's a different type of quarterback. He's honestly like. It's kind of option quarterbacky, where it's like deep, deep shots. Like, he leads the nation in air yards per attempt, but he only completes 43% passes. Like, it's a ton of running and then like massive deep shots.
6 of 13 for 71 yards against Navy, 8 of 17 for 161 yards against
he was 6 of 13 against Houston. And then Utah Tech was their second game.
That's
he was
Utah
8 of
Tech.
17.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah. And then he was 7 of 18 against Kansas.
Yeah.
But big wins, obviously. I've heard people say, I can't believe he's walking away from his team and whatever else. You know what? We got a team here at 92.9, don't we, Jeffrey? It's a hell of a team. A hell of a team. And if my Paytex didn't cash, know what I'd do? I'd walk away from the team. I would 100%. If I looked up and Gary and I did this at the old station before we came over here. We were like, we're buying out your contract, but you can continue to work for free if you want. Just because we're not going to pay you anymore. And Gary and I said, you know what? We really did the same thing. We Matthew Sluka'd him. We said, you know what? We think we probably won't work for free. And we left. We quit that day. We didn't care about the team. Hell, Vernon was still on the team at that point. And we're like, no, thank you. We're teammates. We'll see ya. We're teammates as long as the checks cash. And I agree with that stance 100%. Having said that, I don't know the facts here. If, in fact, he is using leverage to get a better deal next year, if someone has said, listen, take your redshirt year, bail now, and we'll give you twice that next year or something, or... if he's one in an ass from like, no, that's crappy. Don't the facts dictate which side of this
100%? Because to me, it's like, if I'm getting whiffs of, Judkins at Ole Miss.
And explain the Judkins situation at Ole Miss.
So they had agreed to terms for him to return, and then he kept coming back and coming back, more money, more money, more money, more money. And then finally Ole Miss said, let's let him go be somebody else's problem.
Well, and if that's the case, then I'm on Team Las Vegas.
To me, the most important thing is UNLV paying him what they agreed to when he transferred?
Yes, that's exactly the question. And if they are,
I'm on their side.
Then I'm on their side. And if they're not, then I'm on his side.
Correct.
know, it's pretty simple. I don't think it is particularly complicated. All right, we are going to take a break here. We have such a busy show. John Martin coming up next, then Chris Harrington, then Sam Hardiman, and a lot to talk to everyone about. Before that, I will tell you, if you are selling your house, you should call Josh Hysaw and the team at Keller Williams Realty. That's what I do. Josh Hysaw, phone number is 901-461-8147, 901-461-8147. You see right now, light rates are coming down. Good time to sell the house because finally all these people who couldn't afford a new home loan can afford a new home loan because the rates are lower. And Josh, all kinds of things he offers that are kind of astounding. Flexible fees, no upfront costs, let you out of your contract at any time. It's why, it's among other reasons, he has more than 300 five-star Google reviews. Phone number, once again, 901-461-8147, or joshhasthebuyers.com. John Martin on the other side, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now, as I am every Wednesday, by John Martin. Jason and John every single day from 11 until 2. So, John, I wanted to explore with you your mental state. No, because it's interesting. When this, honestly, you and I have fundamentally agreed with a lot of this stuff on the conference realignment subject. One of the differences is the degree of passion that you have for it. Like, I remember when you and Jason first talked about this and first, honestly, had very different opinions about this. You were texting me afterwards. Like, your work, you were from the very start, you were worked up about this. And now that it happened and has played out the way it has, you seem utterly demoralized by this. And I get the sense that it like strikes something deep within you that you're on the far end of this. And do you think that's true? Like, do you think you have been worked up about it, like the subject itself? And if so, why?
Yeah, I've been really worked up about it. And the reason why is very simple, because I love that school. I love that university. I mean, I know I've told the story before, but I never even visited another school when I was, you know, I could have gone to a lot of places, you know, I wasn't a complete idiot. But I never even considered it. I never even wanted to visit. I said, I'm going to Memphis. You know, it's just been in my blood the whole time. And so as somebody that loves that school, it pains me. It pains me to know the predicament that they are in and I feel like they have perpetually been in. And what pains me even more is the fans who are willing to just kind of accept it and just kind of say, what did you want us to do? And honestly, some leadership that seems to say that as well. But I can't tell you, they haven't said anything publicly, but that's, you know, that's how it comes off to me. So yeah, it does pain me. It does have me worked up. You know, I've always been a believer in the upside of Memphis between their corporate, between the market in terms of their interest in sports. You know, unfortunately, and this is where, you know, you get a little sideways, these decisions are driven by football, which is just undeniably, from a television perspective, much less popular here, as evidenced by average viewership. And so as such, the value for Memphis is going to be less than, you know, sort of what I anecdotally believe it should be based on a variety of other factors. And that's why the Pac-12 is saying, hey, I mean, you're getting $2.5 million right now, and that's, we feel comfortable with that effort and exit fee, and that's why we don't have a deal in place. But yeah, I mean, the fact that the university has to tuck its tail between its legs and come back to this sad piece of monkey crap AAC, I mean, I don't know how you can be anything other than demoralized.
Well, why do you feel any different than you did 2 weeks ago? You're in the same situation 2 weeks ago.
Because I had a chance to leave. I had a chance to go. And I looked at it, and I turned it over, and I said, no thanks.
And well, what they said was that we can't. Well, it's not possible. That's a fair point, John. They haven't said anything. But very clearly, what they said is that it's not practical. It's not feasible. Right. It's not. They didn't say no thanks. Like we can't be bothered. They didn't say that. And I don't think that's what drove their decision. What drove their decision was, we don't think this is financially prudent. Right.
That is right. That is what they said. They said because Memphis is a place that lives paycheck to paycheck. That is what they do. They don't want to leave their 7-to-3 job at Chick-fil-A to try to make it in Hollywood, right? They can't. They can't. We can't leave our 7-to-3 job because what if it doesn't work? What if we fail? But what I would say to Memphis is it ain't feasible for you to stay in this league either. Go look at those basketball schedules that guy posted last night. I mean, it's embarrassing, and I realize that. You know, basketball is not, quote-unquote, drive the bus.
I think this is your friend Brandon Bumgarner posted some basketball schedules from these teams. It's pathetic. What they're in is pathetic. You know, John, now you've struck a chord in me. It reminds me of the great, as you you doubtless will recall this movie, that great 70s movie, Flashdance. And you never saw Flashdance, did you?
I've never even heard of Flashdance, but that is actually...
Oh, come on. You know the song, What a Feeling? You know that song?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You know that song? And there's a really hot woman dancing through a steel mill. Okay?
Okay.
And what happens in Flashdance is there's this woman, and she works in a steel mill, John. And but you know what she loves, aspires to do? Dance. She aspires to dance, John, and between breaks at the steel mill, she would dance her little heart out, right? And and so one day she had an opportunity to go try out for a scholarship to a ballet academy, and I forgot exactly what happened. But at first, I think she like. It's been probably it's the 1970s since I saw this movie. At first. She just thought she couldn't do it. And she went back to her sad job at the steel mill. But ultimately, John, she went and she tried out for that academy and she got a scholarship and the rest was history. And you're saying that Memphis is just content with the steel mill.
Yeah. And you're bringing this up lightheartedly, but
I'm bringing the Flashdance part lightheartedly. But that is
what Memphis has resigned itself to. Right. Like they're saying, we don't think we can make it. We don't think we can make it at dance. So we're going to go back and we're going to work every day from 9 to 5, and we're not going to matter. And we're just going to hope.
And at home, we're going to get a 6-pack and drink our 6-pack, and numb ourselves.
And here's what Memphis is doing. They're going to buy the lottery scratch off. They get to the gas station and just pray one day they hit it.
That's no, what it's called. It's called the ACC imploding. That's what that lottery ticket
exactly
is.
That's what I'm saying. Not only the ACC imploding, but them getting the call. And by the way, another point that I made that people need to understand. People said the terms of Memphis going to the Pac-12 were extreme in that they were only going to pay $2.5 million for the exit fee, the media deal, blah, blah, blah. Understand one thing and understand it very clearly. If you ever did get blessed and were invited to the ACC or the Big 12 or something or other, you will be invited under extreme terms. You will not be getting full revenue sharing. You may have to take an SMU type of deal. Very important to understand. They had to pay an exit fee and they had to agree to forego 9 years. Okay. Of no distribution money. 9 years.
And so SMU could have looked at that and said, "What? This is crazy. We can't do that.
This is financially prudent.
This is financially okay." Here, let me ask you this though, John, because this is one of the Keith questions for me. And I heard GP's very good open to his show where he talked about the lack of ambition that this university has shown, and went back to that moment in time when they had a chance, when the Byrd family had produced this, you know, whatever, was arguing in favor of a on-campus stadium. And what they said was, oh, man, just not feasible. Oddly, weirdly enough, eerily similar also, what they did on that day, so they slipped out the back and didn't talk. You know, they had the final vote, and then they slipped out the back and didn't talk. Echoes of today, right? And yep. And so maybe, and so here again, there's a moment. And again, if Memphis had gone, we're going to assume, right, like that it would have been a conference with Tulane and maybe South Florida. Like Memphis was driving the bus. It looks easier not to go now because those other schools didn't go because you were the leader. But you would have been joining a conference that presumably had certainly Tulane in it, you know, possibly Gonzaga in it. We'll see. Anyway, so they said, again, lack of ambition. Just can't do it, right? They have a moment. They got to take a leap the way SMU has taken a leap, the way a long, long time ago Louisville took a leap to build a new stadium. Like Memphis has never – honestly, it goes back to the NFL. The NFL – recruiting the NFL to Memphis in the 70s. Wouldn't be financially prudent to build a new stadium. We'll just fix up the Liberty Bowl. And so what you see what you get, right? It's sort of echoes of the same thing.
And they wouldn't they wouldn't be doing that, by the way, unless they had the state money. I mean, you know, that's the only
I mean back in the day, long time ago in the 70s, Memphis, you know, Memphis said, "No, we're not going to build the NFL a new stadium. You'll be happy coming to this stadium." And then the NFL said, "Fine, we aren't coming." And you live with that lack of ambition. Here's the question though, John. Is it for lack of ambition or is it for lack of resources? In other words, sure, SMU has more ambition. SMU has a lot more resources that enable you to have ambition. Like, I really don't know. And that's why I've been less comfortable about just saying this was the wrong decision than you have, for example, or GP was. I literally don't know. They could have gone to their five boosters and their five boosters says, "We got nothing for you." Like, you know what I mean? And so maybe what you're talking about is the lack of ambition extends to those boosters, right? But maybe that's it. But they simply... what you say is a lack of ambition is just really betrays the abject poverty of this school, which creates the lack of ambition.
Then I would ask, like, what are we doing, right? Like, what are we doing? I mean, if we can't afford to play big boy college sports, why are we trying? You know, like, what's the point? Because, A, I don't believe that number couldn't have been negotiated. Let's start there. Negotiations happen all the time. I mean, Houston, UCF, and Cincinnati did not pay $25 million. They paid $18 million, which is a difference. And by the way, I would also tell you that Memphis paid Tubby Smith, what, $9 million? They paid him $9 million to go away. We're talking about barely double that to potentially change your entire circumstances, right? I mean... We fired Tubby Smith after 2 years and said, "We'll pay that $9 million over 6 years. We got $20 million you can pay over 14 because that's the precedent. I believe 14 years is how UCF is paying and that group is paying the exit fees." And Memphis simply said, "We don't believe it's worth it." I think when you talk about ticket sales, morale boost, excitement, because – again, you've said this. You could sort of align it, right? New stadium, new conference digs. Memphis, 2026.
I agree completely. The part of this that people in the math problem analysis of this, which may, if you add up the various, you know, the digits, you might get here. What I do think people are missing is the deterioration and disengagement of the fan base now. Right. And that people are looking around kind of mystified why this is the biggest season in Memphis football history. Why aren't there more people here? And they're going to be mystified. I'm going to tell you this. Everyone was mystified when they looked at the raw numbers for what the Tigers drew in basketball. You know, they didn't crack 10,000. You know, like, oh, damn, this is Penny Hardaway. Like, what are we doing here? Like, but what's happening is all these people who fell in love with Memphis sports fell in love with Memphis playing Louisville. That's what they fell in love with. You know, they fell in love with a Memphis football schedule when Memphis football would play an SEC team at home almost every year, sometimes two, you know, whatever. They fell in, certainly games against Houston and UCF and those schools. And now you're offering them this schlock. And so you're seeing a deterioration. It's not like this is the same old Memphis is in the same old circumstances that it was in. Memphis is in dramatically diminished circumstances. And apart from whatever the increased television revenue might have been under this new Pac-12 world, I think it would have created new interest and new ticket sales. And sure, Boise came last year and drew 30,000. You know what 30,000 is better than? Better than anything they've drawn this year. You know what it is? It's better than they're going to draw Saturday night by a long shot. And I think if it were a meaningful conference game against a Boise team that was, you know, you got a good Memphis team and a good Boise team and a new stadium, I think they could be drawing 38,000, 40,000, right?
And they will not get that for any game this year. They will not come close to getting that for any game next year, this year. And don't even get me started on the debacle that is basketball. I mean, that is, there is not a single game, not a single home game on that conference schedule next year, not a single game past the calendar month of December that anybody is going to care about. When I think about basketball and Memphis's place, and I want to kick my dog. It is just simply unacceptable. And I think you're exactly right. I don't think Memphis thought this through enough, because there is an opportunity cost, and it could be potentially very steep by staying in the AAC. Let's just say that you got $10 million in a media deal, which, by the way, that's not including everything. That's not including bowl payouts. That's not including tournament units. That's not including college football playoff revenue. Memphis is getting $9 million all in from everything right now from the AAC. The Pac-12 is saying, we'll give you $10 million before we even get to anything else. Okay, travel's going to go up. Got it. Then you got to account for this exit fee. Okay, got it. But what about ticket sales? What about gifts? What about we always seem to focus on, well, you know, what if this doesn't work? Why don't we ever talk about what if it went great? What if Memphis got into this league and they were a top three finisher every single year and offenses were exciting and all the different, we never talk about these things through lens of success. We only focus on failure, you know, and that's an administrative thing up there. And, you know, presidents are risk averse, but I think, you know, I hear if they were asked to make a rash decision and they understandably decided to go with the one that they perceived to be less risky. But I think their analysis that it is less risky will prove to be incorrect.
I want to explore really quickly this idea that they haven't talked about it, because they haven't. They released a statement. And I mentioned at the top of the show, it was kind of too bad. There's a women's basketball event later this week. And originally it said that Ed Scott was going to be there, you know, and that's great. Like, Ed Scott's going to be there. Fantastic. But it turns out, I mean, obviously Coach Simmons is going to be there, but, and you're like, oh, well, good. This is a chance to talk to Ed Scott. They had to send out a clarifying email saying, I apologize for the confusion. Dr. Scott will be there to provide some opening remarks, but he will not be speaking with the media. He will be there in support of Coach Simmons and the program as they prepare, blah, 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 blah. And so they had to literally go out of their way to say he will not be speaking. And that's kind of a bad look. I honestly feel bad for the person who was responsible for the initial email there, because that person may be catching some flack. But to play devil's advocate, because I believe that transparency is good, and I believe, like, listen, when Ed Scott came on this radio program, people heard him and felt good about the program. That's what happened. They heard him and they felt, you know what? Feeling pretty good about everything now. That guy's the leader, right? So the argument would be, and I think you fundamentally have said it or believe it, and I fundamentally do too, is that they should be transparent and they should talk about this openly and explain their decision-making and all of that. They very clearly are not doing that. Just to play devil's advocate, And they got nothing to say. Like what are they other than maybe they really feel uncomfortable talking about the details for various reasons of the negotiations. They feel like it'll hurt them in future negotiations if all of a sudden they're splaying all the details of these negotiations out for the world to see. So they don't want to get into the details. And beyond that, all they can say is we got to be the best Memphis we can be and hope there are future opportunities. And if that's all they're going to say, save it. You know, like then I don't know. How do you feel about them talking or not talking?
Yeah, I mean, I get what you mean. I mean, you probably can't get too much into the sort of nitty gritty, but you know, you made a choice. You made a choice to stay in the AAC. You made the decision, and I think as a public school, with you know an alumni base that lives here, with students, with fans, you know, who have ambition, I think they certainly deserve to hear your perspective on the state of the university and where it's headed. And we may not like the answer. We may not like it. But that doesn't get you out of the responsibility. You know, you have to face the music. And look, I really am not trying to put this on Ed Scott. He got here yesterday. Like he doesn't know what's what. He has no idea in Memphis, right? He just doesn't. And so it's you know a little unfair, I think. I'm not trying to, you know, put this all on him. It's really a presidential decision, right? It's above him, but he is the face of the athletic department. And he's got to answer. He's got to answer for it. Again, I'm not telling him what to say. There's nothing he can say short of we expect a big invite in 6 years, folks. Stay tuned, right? Which he's not going to say. But that doesn't get you, that doesn't absolve you from the responsibility and your obligations to the community. You still got to face the music, right? You made the choice, stand on it publicly. You know, that weak statement of I need to see the face and this community needs to see the face of the athletic department. You know, something. What is the vision and what is the plan? We are owed in Memphis at least that much.
I can acknowledge that. John, you made an MVP bet the other day on who's going to be the MVP of the NFL. I happen to know this. And you did it before Monday night's magnificent performance. Who did you place a little wager, John?
That's right. That is going to be Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen, folks. Get excited.
Listen, were you one of the people trashing him as overrated, not good, too many turnovers, overrated? Was that you, or was that just your was that your partner?
I think was that the NFL?
Was that the NFL Players Association?
Or it could have been the rest of the league for sure.
It could have been the rest of the league. Yeah,
but it does feel like it's his year. I mean, you look around the NFL. I mean, quarterback play has just been, I mean, it's dropped off a cliff for the most part. I mean, Mahomes doesn't look good. I mean, he really seems to be the only quarterback right now that, you know, besides Jaden Daniels, you have to worry about him.
And Andy Dalton. All right, John, we got to get you out of here. Thank you very much, man. Cheer up, John. The future is bright. There, I said.
For the Bills, thanks. Yes.
Okay, well, for the Bills. Okay, caveat. A little asterisk for the Bills. Yeah, all right. Hey, if you've got something to be framed, head on over to the Frame Corner. Frame Corner Memphis is the place to go. You can walk in and buy a beautiful frame, but as I've told you before, they specialize in custom framing. So by that, you just take something really important to you, important pictures, important memorabilia, and you'll lay it on the counter and you say, I want this to last forever. I want to hand this down to my kids. I want to make this memory last. And they will make it look absolutely magnificent. I've heard from folks now who've listened to us here on the radio show and have gone in, and invariably they're thrilled with the results. It's the Frame Corner, Frame Corner Memphis, 5035 Park Avenue, framecornermemphis.com. Back in a moment with Chris Harrington, then Sam Hardiman. Busy Wednesday on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this. Chris Harrington deal. Chris Henry joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That's The Dark End of the Street, the 1967, circa 1967 Memphis Soul song from the late James Carr, who finally gets a posthumous induction into the Memphis Music Hall of Fame this week. I wrote about that song in the Daily Memphian today.
We're going to talk about that in a minute. Before we do that, we did get some news on the Grizzlies and the Derrick Rose contract. Tell us what happened and what we learned and what it means.
Yeah, it came out since he asked out of the deal, he's foregoing the entirety of the contract. I had an inkling it would be something close to that, if not that. And so basically the Derrick Rose contract goes poof. And so he's not on the roster. His money's not on the books. It just, you know, you just sort of take the eraser and wipe that away. What his particular plans or motivations are, I'm not totally clear on. Supposedly he's going to make some statement in that regard. But from the Grizzlies' perspective, it's just, you know, you got an open roster spot and you clear the $3.4 million or whatever his salary was, and you go from there.
So that then means that they can elevate Scottie Pippen Jr. if that's the route they choose to take. And then they also have more money, more flexibility moving forward, essentially. Is that what it clears the way to do?
Yeah, I mean, you know, well, it depends on what they do. My guess would be they'll elevate one of their two-way guys onto the main roster, you know, by probably not immediately, but by the time the regular season starts. I think that's certainly quite likely to be Scottie Pippen Jr. I think they will more than likely keep that other roster spot open into the season and maintain the what will still be a few million dollars under the tax for flexibility's sake. I don't think they're going to feel the need to fill that role until they have a need or until you get later in the season. You know, who knows what will happen? It may just be another one of those two-way guys gets elevated. It might be a little wiggle room for a trade. It might be, you know, give yourself the ability, and if there's a buyout market late in the season, as, you know, teams are tanking and people are sort of, you know, figuring out what their future is, you may have some veteran players show up on the buyout market, and the Grizzlies have their exceptions they didn't use, like their mid-level exception, and then maybe you're able to offer more than a minimum, both because you have the money and because you have the exception you can use it for. Maybe that helps you in a buyout market. I think it's probably not wise to tie up money in a player who doesn't feel a need, who you don't think is going to play for you right now. So I think they'll probably keep their powder dry on that for the moment.
So let's assume that it's going to be Scottie Pippen Jr., who is now a regular member of the roster. In the world of backup point guards, where do you think he ranks? Like, there's some real enthusiasm, I think, about Scottie Pippen Jr. among the Memphis fans, and he certainly had a great summer and all of that. As a backup point guard, where does he rank? And then also, we're not sure that, of course, he's going to be the backup point guard. It may be some combination of Desmond Bane, Marcus Smart, you know, whatever else.
I mean, I have not ranked the league's backup point guards, but to some degree, it's a matter of projection with him, like what you think he's going to be. I'm wary of having certainty on that subject. I think it would be nice to see a little bit more of him in game action. It may be that they, you know, given the need to steal at least one of those two roster spots before you get too deep into the season, maybe you go ahead and do it before you're able to see that. But at least you can see some in preseason. You get some of him in training camp. He was good last season when he played for the Grizzlies. But it was in the context, it was A, not that many games, and B, it was in the context of a team that, you know, was going nowhere. It's hard to put too much stock in anything that happened last season, really, to some degree. But I think he's good. I think he's a good on-ball defender. I think he's got the handle and athleticism to get into the lane. And the shooting and the playmaking is a question with him. I thought he showed some good sort of strides as a playmaker in summer league. The shooting, you know, there's just not enough of a sample to go on. He's certainly not a pure shooter, but it seems like at least that's a viable part of his game. So I think all the components are there for him to be at minimum, you know, a middle of the pack average backup point guard in the NBA, which, you know, that's a useful thing to have. And certainly he could be even better than that.
So I was going to ask you, over under, whatever, we'll say 9 minutes a game Scottie Pippen averages this season. But maybe the better way to do it is, have you set the over under? Where would you set the over under? Where should it be set at Scottie Pippen's minutes a game this year?
Nine is a pretty low number because, I mean, sometimes you soak up minutes at the end of a game, even if you're not in the rotation. Right. You know, sometimes you just don't play at all. If you DNP, that does not factor to zero in your minutes average.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know. I'd put it at like 16, something like that.
Really?
Maybe that's a little high, but you don't see a lot of players.
That assumes he is a regular member of the rotation then. Oh, I mean, I got to go back to
No, it, it assumes that when you're he right. plays, he plays. Yeah. And so when he doesn't, he doesn't a little bit. I don't think you'll see a lot of meaningful players have like, you know, minutes per game averages under 10.
No, I think that's fair. I guess, okay, well then, who knows? Who the hell knows? Like, that's what training camp's for. They're going to sort all this out, too. I'm sure they have an initial plan. But do you think their initial plan will be Ja Morant sits down, in comes Scottie Pippen Jr., or do you think their initial plan will be Derrick Rose sits down, backcourt?
I think the Gigi Jackson injury opens up, you know, it's not something you wish for, but it does open up some maneuverability there, because I think if you have Gigi, just in terms of, you know, your investment in players, you know, you feel like you got to be playing Vince Williams if he's not starting. You have to be playing Luke Kennard. You have to be playing Brandon Clark. You have to be playing Savi Aldama. And I think you feel like you have to be playing Gigi Jackson, and that gets you to 10 players. I think with Gigi out of the mix, if you're playing 10, you don't have to play Scottie Pippen. You also don't have to play Jake LaRavia. You don't have to play, you know, John Conchar. You don't have to play Jalen Wells. And so if you're going to play a 10-man rotation, I think you can do whatever works best. And while I think the lineup could use more size, which points towards LaRavia, it may be that you can use more ball handling even more. So I think it's going to be whatever works best, and maybe that changes some night to night. I think it's a real open question of whether they need Pippen or, you know, a quote-unquote point guard off the bench every single night. The answer to that may be that they do, but I think that is a thing to try to determine.
So I have it on good information that there's a story up that Drew did on the Ja 2s dropping, and I have good information that you're the person who talked to Ja about the Ja 2s because Drew was otherwise occupied that day.
Right.
I'm not a sneakerhead. You're not a sneakerhead.
Yeah, that's why I handed it back off to Drew. I did the interview, and I could have written the story, but like I don't know or care that much about shoes, and Drew knows and cares more than I do about shoes. So I just gave him the interview audio and let him, you know, write it. Right. The shoes were good to me.
What'd you think? Yeah. What was the conversation like?
I mean, there wasn't much to the conversation. It was 10 minutes on a Zoom, and it's, you know, talking up the new product. So, like, whatever. Josh seemed to be in good spirits. It was a very friendly conversation. Wasn't a lot of there, you know. So, I don't know. He's got new shoes. And the shoes are sort of coinciding, like, the launch of the shoes with the relaunch of Josh, the player. And I don't know. I'm not super excited about trying to help Nike sell product, so I don't really care that much.
Do you set eyes on the shoes? You did set eyes on the shoes.
Yeah, they look good. I mean, I think the shoes are good. I wouldn't wear them because I cover the Grizzlies, but also it's not really my personal style. But like, also, who cares about what my personal style is? I think the shoes look good.
All right, we opened the show with "The Dark End of the Street" was the song that you chose to play. It's also the song you wrote about over at the Daily Memphian. I've tweeted out your piece on it, James Carr. And as you, the conceit was, you identified the greatest soul song to come out of Memphis, and this is the one you picked.
I did a story for the Commercial Appeal maybe 10 years ago that was like a list, the 60 greatest Memphis soul songs. And I had "The Dark End of the Street" number one on that list. And I had people like, I got some pushback, like, I've never even heard of this song. A, who cares? But B, it is kind of interesting that it's not. To me, the interesting thing is the sort of difference between its standing as a kind of standard, and really an instant standard. Like, it got started getting covered immediately. Like, within a year of that song getting released on a little tiny record label in Memphis, Aretha Franklin's doing it, and Percy Sledge is doing it, and the Flying Burritos are brothers, and all those are from the late 60s. And so there's this gap between how familiar I think your average listener is with it and the stature it really has within the music world, where, like, if you read my story, there's links to, like, you know, Bruce Springsteen doing it, and Tom Petty doing it, and I include a playlist that's 50 different versions from Spotify. I think it's a kind of platonic ideal of a soul song. Like, I think it's one of the great compositions in American music, and there's something, like, really almost elemental about it that I think is pretty great, but it is not, you know, it's not Soul Man or whatever.
Yeah, it's it is incredible, by the way. I had never heard of it, and I really almost was startled when I got when he included 50 people who've covered it, and then I went and listened to the original, and then I went and listened to the Linda Ronstadt version, like, whatever. There's a million versions out there, so I was trying to pick random versions. It's kind of remarkable. Never was a big hit.
I mean, it was a modest hit. It peaked at number 77 on the pop charts. It did crack the top 10 on the R&B charts, so it was barely a top 10 R&B hit. But, you know, this is a 7-inch released on Gold Wax Records out of Memphis, like a tiny little indie label. And so, you know, I mean, it had that working against it, but not certainly the stature of the song as sort of a text within, like, American pop music, and the degree it's covered and it's lived on outstrips its commercial, you know, output in its moment, certainly.
So what's its history? Written by Dan Penn and Chips Moman. They're both already in the Memphis Music Hall of Fame.
Yeah. They were both sort of like session hands in that sort of Memphis. We talked about Muscle Shoals a little bit yesterday. That Memphis Muscle Shoals nexus going on there in the 60s and the early 70s. Chips Moman started out working at Stax and then had a falling out and left and started his own studio, American Sound Studios, which there's currently a Family Dollar store and a historical marker where that used to be. But they recorded all kinds of stuff, like Sweet Caroline by Neil Diamond famously sort of came out of that studio. The first John Prine album, Suspicious Minds, Elvis's late 60s comeback stuff, like just tons of stuff came out of Moman Studio. And then Dan Penn was this weird sort of shadow figure, sort of this sort of ornery, like semi-legendary cult figure who was just in the background of all kinds of stuff. As a songwriter, as a session player, as a producer, as just a guy hanging around all the time.
So they wrote it. They wrote it in Nashville. In what'd you say? I'm scrolling through the story here. It was they were in Nashville at some. What were they doing? What's the origin story?
So they either wrote it or they finished writing it. It's a little unclear there. You know, like, I don't think they started from dead scratch. Maybe they had an idea they were kicking around. But it was a Nashville, it was a disc jockey, country music disc jockey convention in Nashville, and they were all hanging out playing cards in a hotel room, playing poker. And they took a break from the card game and went to some other guy, actually the guy who owned Gold Wax, with his hotel room to finish the song, and then went back to playing cards.
It's The Dark End of the Street. It's about cheating, really. And James Carr, the singer, what's his story? He's being inducted posthumously, right?
Yeah, he was... I would argue he's the most significant Memphis soul singer who was not part of Stax or High being the label that Al Green was on. He didn't record a lot in the late 60s. He had two albums, a handful of singles, and then sort of got lost. He had a lot of problems. A lot of what I think people have determined now were undiagnosed mental illness issues. There may have been some substance issues there, too, that's been written about. That's a little less certain. But he had lots of issues and in his personal life. And then the music business also was just hard, period, no matter what. And just didn't really have a full career. And so he recorded for a while in the late 60s and just disappeared. And then had a little bit of a comeback sort of in the late 80s, early 90s that didn't really amount to much. It's been written about most famously by Peter Gorelnick in his book Sweet Soul Music. And became kind of this lost figure, cult figure type. He actually died in 2001, I think he was 59, of lung cancer. So a little bit of a wayward story, but he left behind some great records.
You can read the piece over at the Daily Memphian. I have tweeted it out. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
That's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. We'll talk to him tomorrow about the movies that are on screen in Memphis This week. In the meantime, I will tell you, over at O'Call, it is Custom Clothing Week. And so if you are looking for a need a sport coat or a suit for a special occasion, you can enjoy custom suiting from, and now there's a whole bunch of beautiful names, some of which I can pronounce. Samuelson, Jack Victor, Hart Schaefner and Marks, Hamilton Shirts, etc., etc. Caston, yeah. Jeffrey, you might be better at these than I am. Monroe, I got a couple of Monroe sport coats, honestly, that are just spectacular. But the whole idea of Custom Clothing Week, it's a week of service designed with the aim of creating exclusive garments, customized tailored elements and details. Meet with our clothing specialists where we continue to help you reset your wardrobe for today's needs. So over at O'Call, if you haven't been for a while, it's Custom Clothing Week. But also, I will tell you, there's a lot of college football programs that are riding high right now. It's fall is officially here. So if you want to transition to get it in the quarter zips or the hoodies, they've got quarter zips and hoodies in the official collegiate colors of Tennessee, of Ole Miss, Memphis, Alabama, and a whole bunch more. So this would be a great weekend, a great week to get in and celebrate the arrival of fall by visiting our friends from O'Call. We're going to take a break. There's been a lot that's happening in the city. Memphis plans to buy the, or aims to buy the Sheraton Hotel. Stories about new safety measures downtown, improvements to AutoZone Park, etc. Sam Hardiman's on top of all of it. We'll talk to Sam when we return. It is the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Sam Hardiman from the Daily Memphian on Twitter, or X, at Sam Hardiman. Sam has been busy lately. We got a whole bunch of stories to talk to, including the city of Memphis. Sam evidently wants to buy the Sheraton Hotel. This seems curious to me. It wouldn't seem to me that the city would be in the hotel owning business. What are the state of things, and why does the city want to buy the hotel?
The city of Memphis, I don't think, eagerly is entering the hotel owning business. Jeff, I don't think Mayor Paul Young took office on January 1st and said, let me use taxpayer dollars to buy a hotel. I don't think that was on his to-do list. Shortly after he took office in February, the Sheraton went on the block. And the Sheraton, for those who don't know, is literally physically attached to the Renaissance Convention Center. And the Renaissance Convention Center is sort of the key to this entire thing. And what the city is planning to do, really just for the nuts and bolts for people who haven't read it, is spend about $22 million in bond money. The bonds will be paid from sales tax that would otherwise fund city services. So over time, this is going to be a drain on the city coffers. The city needs to buy, feels they need to buy this hotel for really a simple reason. They need to keep it a convention center hotel. And if it were to go to auction at the end of the year, which is planned to go to, unless the city buys it or someone else buys it, there's no guarantee it would be a convention center hotel. And so why do you need a convention center hotel? Well, A, the buildings are connected. And so it would be kind of weird if, say, the Sheraton became a self-storage facility right next to a Renaissance Convention Center. That's probably not good for your convention center business. But the real reason is, and you can check out this article, and I would really encourage you to, on dailymemphian.com right now, is the real reason is the city has about $300 million in debt on the Renaissance Convention Center. And in order to pay that debt, it needs a functioning Sheraton Hotel because it needs to continue to book conventions. But a key revenue stream, a key source of money to pay that debt, Jeff, is hotel motel tax dollars. That is also a key revenue stream to pay the existing bonds on FedEx Forum and for the $550 million renovations that are planned and sort of are underway on FedEx Forum. And so all that to say is the city is like, if we let, and I'm paraphrasing here, the city is essentially looking at a scenario where we let the Sheraton go dark and become a glorified storage facility or a Motel 6, not impugning Motel 6, I've had some good times in them, but like, if we let it become that, where are we on this key revenue stream and all this debt that we have to still pay on the Renaissance Convention Center?
Just by way of background, is it currently operating as a Sheraton? Is that right?
That is correct. Yes. It would not remain a Sheraton.
And they're getting out of they're not interested in it. Is that what's that's the impetus here? They're Sheraton is not.
They're getting out of it. And to be clear, this isn't like Sheraton, the company that's owned by Marriott. Like, it's kind of a licensing thing. You know, it's a franchise. Essentially, this group out of Miami called Starwood Capital Group is the owner of it, and they are getting out of this asset. Yes.
Okay. And did I read in one of your stories that occupancy rate right now is 36%? I think I saw that.
That is correct. Yes. Yeah. The city presented data to the city council yesterday, which we reported in the story that I would urge everyone to go read that's on our website right now, that 36% this year occupancy of this hotel. Yes.
Okay. Just for clarification, Sam, I want people to read the story after this segment is over.
Okay.
Then, having heard from you, they can get the full picture. And not only that, we'll point them to other stories while they're on the site that you've written that they should also read. I read it this morning and I had all these questions answered. 36% occupancy rate does not seem particularly high. Have you ever stayed in? Do you know the state of the Sheraton right now? It doesn't seem particularly.
It's not great. I haven't stayed in it. I have had a drink at the bar, was several years ago. It wasn't great then. It has gotten worse. It's also in this sort of awkward location of downtown, right? Where it is in North Downtown, just like the convention center.
Right.
It's situated between an overpass and the jail, right? Like, it is just a very awkward spot to have your convention center and to have your main hotel.
Kind of stupid, that is part really. Of it. Right, I mean, seems kind of stupid between the overpass and the jail. But here's the truth, though, is that when I hear about this, I think, well, if I were in a hotel business, where would I want a hotel other than right next to a convention center? I guess the fact that the city feels like they have to step in and do it suggests that they're not confident that a major hotel chain would want to have. In other words, if the economics are such that it's compelling for a hotel chain to put a hotel there, why would the city need to step in? Is there something to that? I mean, I presume
Certainly. There was a local ownership group led by Chance Carlisle, Carolyn Hardy, and Tyrone Burrows that had an interest in buying it and keeping it as a convention center hotel, and they're probably going to be the ones who manage it after the city purchases it. But the city was sort of looking at that deal, and I asked the mayor about it, and again, you can read this on WMMP.com, and the city was like, it still just became a lot easier if we bought the hotel and then let them manage it, right? Like, because essentially, like, it becomes, well, if they buy the hotel, and then the city is, like, offering an incentive, like, are you sort of baking in, like, this, you know, like, risk-free profit for a development group that's, like, coming to the city for a significant subsidy to keep this thing afloat, right? So it just, to the city's perspective, it says, why don't we just put in the money and then pay someone to manage it, rather than having them buy it and then we're still subsidizing it anyway.
If that's the way it worked out, they buy it, another group manages it, does it have some random name? How about the Jeff Hotel? How about the Jeff? I like the Jeff as a hotel. Or maybe the Jeffrey sounds, that would be more distinguished. G-E-O-F.
The G&J Hotel. That would be good.
The G&J Hotel. You know? What would it be called?
That is still under wraps. It will lose the Sheraton name. There will probably be a nice new flag. Flag is code in hotel business, for those who don't know, for the name on the hotel. It's not a flagpole outside, as someone asked me yesterday. It has nothing to do with flagpoles. But that is still under wraps. I expect we will learn that in the coming weeks, probably after the city closes on the transaction, which still needs city council approval, by the way.
Yeah, well, I gathered that. I read Jerry Green's comments in your story today. She seems skeptical. She said, does a taxpayers really want us spending public money on a hotel? That seemed to be the essence of her skepticism.
Yeah, I mean, I can see your point. I would love to poll how people feel about taxpayers owning a hotel. At the same time, regardless of whether the city owns it or not, the city still has to pay tons and tons of debt related to the convention center and FedEx Forum. And the path to paying that debt gets a lot harder if you lose the Sheraton as a working hotel.
Yeah. I have to say, as you describe all this, it feels like one way to put it would be a puzzle. Another way would be a house of cards. Like, it seems all so wildly interconnected. We need this tax money to pay for the improvements that we already, on this hotel to pay for this massive project that we already paid for at the convention center, and to pay for the massive project that we paid for at FedEx Forum, and the massive project that's yet to come at FedEx Forum, and interconnected, I would say, Sam.
Is that Rojas on the ground.
Whoa, yeah, there we go.
That is very, very, it's a tangled web we weave, Jeff.
It is a tangled web we weave. All right, other tangled webs. What's happening at AutoZone Park?
The city taxpayers, again, sales tax that would be funding other things, is going to go to pay debt. The city is going to give $5 million worth of bond proceeds to AutoZone Park. That is going to pay for better safety netting. So when Jordan Walker is inevitably sent back down to AAA for some weird reason by the St. Louis Cardinals and rips some line drives, people will be protected, a better batting cage, and better LED lights.
The LED lights are like lights that light the field.
They're just light bulbs. The field. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're just the better. It is better lighting for the field. LED, better LED lighting for the field. Yes.
Yeah. All right. And then finally, you've had a busy week, by the way. The mayor, I guess is the conversation. I think the story went up Sunday.
Yes.
The mayor told you he is going to be asking the state for help with downtown security, which we need because we need downtown security, but also as part of the continuing negotiations and effort to keep the Grizzlies in town. They obviously are interested, as you pointed out in the story, in that story, Jason Wexler has led many a tour around FedEx Forum about the needed improvements. So what did you learn from the mayor?
Yeah, so what I learned from the mayor was essentially this, and this has been something that's kind of been in the ether for a while, but, you know, the city has essentially the money it needs to renovate FedEx Forum. The city and county, they have that money. They have the cash for the actual arena. What remains sort of in the air is how do you change, and, you know, we've talked before about Beale Street and the Grizzlies sort of having ideas on what Beale Street should look like. How do you change downtown? How do you change really southern downtown, right, around the Forum? And make it a safer place. Because in the past year, there have been shootings there. There was a shooting not very far from FedEx Forum during the NCAA tournament. It wasn't technically in that area, but it was a couple blocks away. There was, you know, shots very close to Malco Powerhouse last Friday night, right? And so it is all on the mind of both the Grizzlies. It is on the mind of the city. How does this get better? And so the mayor essentially told me, I asked him, because it had been hinted at by another public official when that person was giving an interview to the Daily Memphian, that there was something the Grizzlies and city wanted. And so I asked, what are those things the Grizzlies and city want? And the mayor said, you know, he wouldn't give specifics. You know, the Grizzlies, they want to keep this stuff out of the press despite my efforts and despite others' efforts. But you know, there is a tab that the city is going to have the state to help pick up for downtown security. And that looks like probably a camera mesh network. So, you know, the best way to describe it is, you remember that really creepy scene when Bruce Wayne in The Dark Knight, like, creates this big, you know, surveillance thing that Morgan Freeman, you know, resigns after helping him catch the Joker. That's what we're talking about here. Maybe not as cool looking, but similar, right? And then you would probably have some traffic mitigating measures. You should expect to see, if this all goes well, a very different game day experience for those who are walking into FedEx Forum, I would say.
Interesting. You mentioned another public... J.B. Smiley was on Behind the Headlines, the WKNO TV show. This was last Friday night, I guess it aired. He said the Grizzlies are going to get their money. That's what he said. And of course, this was in reference to the fact that there is a current fight over the gun referendum that seemed to be staying on the ballot, which is irritating some folks in Nashville. And so the fear was, there's been a threat that Nashville is going to withhold sales tax money. And the fear was, Nashville may be less inclined to pay for all this security stuff for Memphis because they're ticked off about the gun referendum. J.B. Smiley says the Grizzlies are going to get their money. Does that mean he knows for certain the Grizzlies are going to get their money?
No, he doesn't know that. I don't think anyone knows that yet. I think that, you know, time will tell. Obviously, look, you know, we're in September, late September here. You know, the legislative session is still 2.5 months away. Heads can cool, but the state of Tennessee, the state's Republican leadership is not happy with the city of Memphis, and they are not happy with the Memphis City Council. And, you know, it's one thing for, you know, because the city mayor, Memphis Mayor Paul Young, has been very clear saying, like, look, I think the referendum is futile. I understand that the desire for gun control in the city, and I'd love for my city to get carved out, essentially, and I'm paraphrasing him here, but this isn't going to work, and we're just antagonizing people, right? We're just antagonizing people. People in state leadership, such as Cameron Sexton, the House Speaker, Lieutenant Governor Randy McNally, who runs the Senate, essentially, they can understand the distinction between J.B. Smiley and Paul Young because they are in that 0.1% of information. But as their caucus, you know, the rank and file Republican supermajority from, you know, rural Tennessee, largely, who isn't from around here, are they going to understand that political distinction? Or are they just going to be like, wait, Memphis wants this after they kind of flipped us the bird, so to speak? And we're going to see, because like I said, there is a ton of time here. This could all blow over, just like, you know, I hope Helene blows over and doesn't impact my tennis plans this weekend, but it could also not. And so we're really going to see.
Weirdly enough, you know, and I've accused in a recent column the state of sometimes being petty and vindictive, but weird enough, what it would require is the state to sort of be the bigger, you know, to overlook. Because honestly, if you go look at that, the behind the headlines interview, it is J.B. Smiley being antagonistic, you know, like openly antagonistic. You know, there's a war of words going back. And in fairness, Cameron Sexton has been at various times as well. Yeah, it's what it will require, it seems to me, is Cameron Sexton and his colleagues being willing to do what is right for the city of Memphis. And people may not want to hear this in Memphis, because that's not how we envision them over there. But it will require them doing what is right for the city of Memphis and best for the city of Memphis, despite the fact that someone's intentionally, you know, poking them. Right. I mean, it seems to me that's editorializing, Sam. I don't expect you to.
Yeah. I mean,
What
I would say is, yeah, I'm not going to weigh in on that totally. But what I would say, right, is like there is the perception of how people feel Memphis is treated by the Nashville. And what I'm just going to repeat to people is the conversation we're having about the Memphis Grizzlies and their future here is so much different if the city of Memphis was not sitting on $230 million in cash from the state of Tennessee for that. For the federal dorm renovations, it's completely different. The city of Memphis, I study their budget all the time, did not have that kind of money without the state of Tennessee. That hole you see in Citizens Bank Liberty Stadium does not exist, but for the state of Tennessee being willing to open the books. And like, that's not to praise them. That's just to say, like, that's real in reality. And I would also say that, like, the state of Tennessee, like, we can talk about them being bigger or whatever. It's also in their best interest to have the second largest city in the state, the right. Second largest contributor of GDP, be thriving and not decline. That is good for all of Tennessee. So, like, it's in everyone's best interest for this to all work out.
Sam, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff.
Go read his stories, by the way, over at the Daily Memphian. He's written a bunch of them this week. Jeffrey, I have a question for you. And the question is this. Do we have time to take a break or not? Because we kind of went long on Sam.
We can. Yes, we can take a break now.
We'll take a real quick break. Back in a moment. It's Jeff Calkinshire, 92.9 FM ESPN. NFL Week 4 is here. You can start with a chance for a big win on FanDuel, America's number one sports book. If you're new to FanDuel, get started with $200 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. That's right. Got a Thursday night game, Cowboys at Giants. Build your own same game parlay. CeeDee Lamb over passing yards. Dak Prescott over passing yards. I'm going big on the Cowboys here. Devin Singletary under rushing yards. Whatever. Go to FanDuel.com/Calkins. That's the promo code. C-A-L-K-I-N-S. C-A-L-K-I-N-S. And again, if you're a new user, $200 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. FanDuel is, of course, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, present Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable, but bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. Jeffrey tells me we have to go. I will ask Jeffrey what is coming up next on 92.9.
Here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Norton Hurd joins the program today. Joe Gatto of Impractical Jokers fame will join us on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Kevin Cerrito, my company this week. Cobb will join Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for Now Work Is Done.